So far in 2017, Forbes and Podcast One have already launched three highly acclaimed shows. The Interview with Steve Bertone features the business world's most interesting names, like Adam Carolla, Twitter founder Sean Rad, and Hollywood's own Jessica Alba.
So I spent a lot of my childhood in hospital and hospital beds.
Under 30 with Steve Goldblum talks to the movers and shakers, like Nation Builder CEO Jim Gilliam and NFL Big Game winner Martellus Bennett.
Guys are afraid to be themselves because of their marketing deals.
And The List with Art of Charms, Jordan Harbinger.
We'll get behind-the-scenes insight and information that doesn't make the print cut.
Next up, Sports Money with Mike Ozanian talking to team owners, athletes, and industry leaders about the enterprise and money behind supreme athletic competition. Forbes on Podcast One. Not just entertaining, informative. Subscribe now at iTunes and don't forget to rate, review, and share.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. A church building on a mandate. Get it on. Welcome to the show. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for sharing the good news. How you doing, Drewski?
Good. I always think of things I want to bring up with you long after I should have. Did I bring up George Michael's, poor George Michael's demise?
No.
Did we discuss this? What from the headlines, again, I'm preoccupied with fake news these days. I can't help it. Everything is beyond.
Now, he died a few months ago.
Yes. Now, the coroner has come out.
He was 55.
51, 50. I think.
Oh, he was 50s, young.
50s, 53, something like that.
I thought it was sort of mid-50s.
Yeah, let's say mid-50s.
Yeah.
And he had a history of drug addiction, alcoholism. And this pathologist steps up and goes, we got it now. He died of natural causes.
Mm-hmm.
He had a dilated cardiomyopathy and fatty liver.
Right.
Which are a million miles from natural causes. A million miles.
They're from drinking and
they're from
drugs?
Drinking and drugs, yes.
Right.
Yeah. They can be caused by other things. They can be caused by a virus, can be caused by high blood pressure, can be caused by coronary artery disease.
53.
And but if you have a drug and alcohol history and you, by the way, see fatty liver, it's alcohol. That's alcohol or drugs.
Can you get fatty liver from drugs?
No, it's alcohol. But you could get cardiomyopathy from alcohol or meth.
Or meth, you say?
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol or meth, but not Percocet.
Not opiates. Opiates, this is the crazy thing about opiates. Opiates are harmless.
Ooh.
Harmless. They just cause horrible addiction.
Yeah.
Or the worst addictive disease, but they don't hurt anything.
It's so weird. Imagine if we did with this what we do with secondhand smoke. We're trying to attribute everything to, I could remember.
Gary sent me an article today about what asthma or allergies or something and intrauterine smoke exposure.
I got into an argument with, you know, we should find one of these days, Gary. I did on my KLSX morning show. We had the mayor, I believe, of Calabasas come on. And
sounds like a horse.
The mayor of Calabasas. Hello, Wilbur. So we had the mayor of Calabasas come on because he had banned smoking from parks. Because it's like, do you want this around your children? Right. It's like, well, I'll put it to you another way. Do you want to live in a country where a guy can't go to open field and light a cigarette?
Weird.
I'm not saying he's blowing it into my kid's face. I'm sure, by the way, you could say no smoking in the children's sand pit. But once you're just walking down the baseball diamond deserted, I do want to live in that world if that guy feels like smoking or smoking a cigar. Even if he wants to have a beer, I don't mind living in that world. But anyway, you've decided it's the biggest threat we have. By the way, that same guy can light a sparkler at the beach and I'm not going to have a fucking hissy fit about it. Yes, that is the world I like to live in. He was explaining to me why it needed to come to an end. Mm. And by the way, whether you're Gloria Allred or a politician, local or national, I will destroy you with no preparation easily. And it is because I'm smarter than you, but it's also because I'm right, which makes it very easy to win this stupid debate we're having because I get to have truth on my
side.
What
did you say?
You have nothing.
What happened?
He was explaining to me that Dana Reeves died of secondhand smoke.
Oh,
that's Christopher Reeves' younger bride. Died because she died of lung cancer.
Yeah.
And I said, well, she wasn't a smoker, and then Christopher Reeves wasn't a smoker. So if she's been with Christopher Reeves for 20 years, taking care of him in this environment, you know. Yeah. How is it that she died of secondhand smoke? She used to be a cabaret singer back in the day, and she worked at cabarets where they smoked, and that's where she caught secondhand smoke from. I don't know how long she worked at cabarets, but she probably stopped when she married Christopher Reeves. And whatever the span that was, by his logic, then every cocktail waitress and everyone who attended the cabarets with any regularity or manager, whatever, we should all succumb at 49 and a half for, you know, lung cancer or whatever it is. And but the reason this guy was a particular, oh, Barry Groveman, the particular, what Barry's particular knack for blathery retardism was, he'd say that children's asthma is on the rise. And I'd say, yeah, but smoking's on the decline.
Yeah.
And he'd go, you don't care about children's asthma? And I'd say, no, you're trying to link it to something that is declining. Mm-hmm. So children's asthma is up, you know, threefold since 1969. It's like, yeah, and smoking's down to less than half from 1969. So
clearly there's no, that's not the issue.
Or maybe it is. Maybe we should start smoking more. Well, according to your fucking retard logic, Barry.
Did you say that to him?
I've said everything to him. But he's such a pompous ass that he came back. This is what makes him a politician. Same with Gavin Newsom. They come back to their own semi-retarded hypotheses again.
Yeah.
So you walk your...
It's just empty slogans.
Well, that's just, yeah, just to show you Barry doesn't give a fuck and is not listening to himself. Yeah. He walks in with his fucked up, retarded... attempt at science. I shoot it down immediately, and then he walks it back 12 minutes later as if he didn't do it the first time and have it shot down. That's Gavin Newsom sat there for 50 minutes and did the exact same exercise in rowing a retarded boat with one paddle. He just went in a circle and circle, and then he'd come and march it back again. It's a kind of hubris that you have as a politician where you don't have smart people telling you to shut the fuck up enough. What's this guy doing? Oh, he's like probably selling RVs or something now.
No, he's a lawyer.
He's a lawyer.
Memory serves. I'm trying to. We
shouldn't
had
these
this...
guys be better at what they do if they're fucking lawyers? Guys put on academic probation at a junior college, just whipping your ass in a free-form debate? Sad.
Yeah, he's a partner at Music Peeler.
Okay. Sure, they're handling all the very important secondhand smoke-related cases. Well, who's running Calabasas without this fucking genius at the helm?
As I recall, I'll look it up, but as I recall, the way that it works in Calabasas is you can only serve like one term and then you have to go back on city council in another position. I think he was mayor twice, and I think he's now bailed out of public
we
service.
We should all go there and smoke in the park. Smoking in the park. Yeah, Dana Reeves died of secondhand smoke.
You should have asked him what's the proof.
They also used to, as a part of that law.
Proof? You think it's good to smoke in front of kids? Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
As part of that law, they'll pull you over for smoking in your car if you're driving through Calabasas.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. A bunch of my friends grew up there.
Wow.
Smoking in your car?
Huh?
Doing the Lord's work.
Well, I mean, presumably you have the window down. And
wow.
That's
secondhand.
The same as,
that's
the same
spreading.
As standing right there on the side of the street.
That's like a crop duster.
They should outlaw cars.
Weaponized.
Too,
they got outlaw cars. Well, Barry will get to it. James, 25, Baton Rouge.
Hey guys,
what's going on? Thank you, man.
Kind of nervous, so bear with me. One quick question for each of you, if that's all right. Drew, I know you say it's important for women to get genital warts removed because of cancer, but how big of a deal is it for guys?
Same, exactly the same. And it's different in terms of how it's done and the regions that's affected and the sort of how we evaluate it. But women, you're taking off not just the wart, but the effect of the warts. In men, you can't really see that, so we don't really have that technology, but you can get the wart off. The wart, the more warts you have, the bigger the warts, the more virus you produce, the more infectious you are, the more likely to have complications and the more likely they are to spread. And, you know, they are the leading cause of penile cancer, anal cancer, and oral, you know, mouth cancers, particularly mouth cancers, particularly in smokers and drinkers.
What about the ovarian stuff?
No ovarian.
Cervical.
Cervical.
Well, so isn't it a big deal with the cervical stuff?
Oh, yeah, big deal. He was asking about men, though.
Oh, okay.
And men. And it's not really, it's not the wart, and it's not necessarily.
But spreading it to the woman and giving her the cervical.
Yes, absolutely. And the wart, again, you know, doesn't necessarily mean you have that type of virus, but it's, you know, it's something you want to get under control, and it can spread and become more of a problem if you don't.
So what's the difference between ovarian and cervical in terms of its danger?
You know, they're both very dangerous. Cervical, if it gets away, mm-hmm. is devastating.
Mm-hmm.
Ovarian, if it gets away, can actually still be cured.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's still heavy treatment.
Oh, wait. He had a question for me, too. Sorry. Go ahead, James.
All right. Thank you, Drew. And Adam, you know boxing pretty well.
Yes.
If Floyd and Connor ever had a boxing match, what do you think the line would be on that? Do you think Connor actually had a shot?
It's already – I can give you the real answer.
Well, it's got to be 11 and a half. Oh, no. Well, it's how people bet, I guess. Oh, no. Vegas will come out and set a line before there can be betting.
It's already
right?
It's set. That's what I'm saying.
I'm trying to, I understand what you're saying, Gary. I'm trying to guess what it would be. I, unlike other people, listen when people speak. Okay. I'd give my, you know, 10 times chance of winning. But Vegas is probably have to encourage action. Is sort of what they're talking about. I would have Vegas at Floyd at about a 3.5 to 1.
Really?
No. What's he got?
25.
Oh.
I started. Wow. 11 or something. Yeah. I didn't know.
I thought you were going to go the other way.
Well,
I thought you were going to say make it crazy odds to encourage the action early.
Well, it is, 25 is a little. That have to change. I mean, there'd be so much action on McGregor. People just bet $100 on McGregor.
Oh, I think it'll change, but I don't think you're going to get much. I mean, I think 9, 10, 11 to 1 is kind of where you settle on fight night.
Oh, really?
In true boxing rules.
I guess so.
Because, I mean, there's a theory out there that if McGregor starts losing, he'll just get himself disqualified because he'll have already gotten paid.
Yeah.
Just try to kick Mayweather or something.
Well, the thing, you know, Mayweather's 40. And has been retired for a year or whatever. Like, it's not exactly like he's in his prime, although he's pretty unbeatable. But it's not like he's 31 and peaking. He's 40 and basically traveling around in a SUV with mink fur on the floor mats. You know, like, it's not like he's in camp. I don't know. I mean, there is an element of boxing after 40. Especially in the lighter divisions, not George Foreman, the lighter division guys. After 40, you don't see a lot historically of guys getting deep in these lighter weight divisions. You know, the thing that goes, your quickness goes first. Your power goes last.
Oh, really? Know? That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why when you see those guys, you can see some dude at the gym who's 50, like doing powerlifting and stuff, but you won't see him dominating on the basketball court.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
That same guy is not chewing up guys in the ring with double jabs and stuff like that. He may be lumbering along and banging on them sort of thing, but that first step, that kind of quickness leaves. Endurance sort of remains. There's plenty of dudes doing Ironmans and they're 55 years old. You know, you can keep the endurance part. You can keep the strength part, but you can't keep the quickness part. And because in reflexes part, and the guys who fight at those lighter divisions rely on the quickness and the reflexes. So, you know, 40 ain't old anymore, but it's old for a 140-pound boxer. There ain't a lot of examples of 145-pound guys or whatever he fights at now in their 40s. Mm-hmm. Fights at 151. The higher up in weight, the better. But still, he ain't young. So, and he hasn't been boxing for a year or so. I don't know what year officially when his last fight was. But anyway, so that's my thought. No, James, I don't think he stands a chance, but on the other hand, it'd be a fun fight to watch on pay-per-view. All right.
Hey, speaking of uncertainty of a fight, how about all the uncertainty financially flying around the country? Well, you don't want all your retirement life savings sitting necessarily in one investment strategy. You got to diversify. Look into richuncles.com. It's a REIT, also called a real estate investment trust. That's what REITs stand for. They own commercial property. They collect the rent from creditworthy clients. They pay you a monthly cash dividend, currently at 7%. Pretty good. Recently featured in Wall Street Journal. You can see that article and all the info you need to consider an informed decision regarding Rich Uncles at richuncles.com. And like any investment, it has risk. It is not guaranteed. Rich Uncles REIT is a Reg A Tier 2 offering. But if you're looking for a return and you've always wanted to get involved in real estate, commercial real estate, this is now a way that the average investor can and get that 7% return. It's richuncles.com. You can call them at 855-RICH-UNCLES and let them know you heard about it on the Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Rich Uncles REIT is seeking indications of interest concerning its Reg A Tier 2 securities offering. Any indication of interest involves no obligation or commitment of any kind. No money or other consideration is being solicited, and if sent, response will not be accepted. No sales will be made or commitments to purchase accepted until the offering statement is qualified. This media outlet is being paid under $2,000 by Rich Uncles for this single message.
I was told you the other show, I was filing through a bunch of pictures and old stuff that I just had, and I came across this old card. For some reason, I've hung on to all these years. Now, cards, greeting cards, things of that nature, used to have some currency in your life. You know, they meant something. I don't, probably because we had so little of nothing, they meant something. You know, I could remember every kid I knew had one of those yellow and whatever, light yellow cigar boxes. Cardboard.
Yeah.
The hinge was made out of cardboard.
Today, they would not know anything about this. That was a big deal.
They were ubiquitous.
Yeah.
And some kids would keep their joints in there, and some kids would keep their little skateboard ball bearings and other little wrenches and things. Some people keep their Hot Wheels or whatever in there.
Well, but I think it was a male thing. I don't know how many girls have.
Definitely a male thing. Yeah. But for some reason, when I grew up, you couldn't throw away a cigar box that had a shape, had a little heft, could be used for something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now, we'll take whole big, you know, displays and cardboard cutouts of this, chuck them. You know, when I was a kid, your prize's possession would be a cutout cardboard thing of like Evel Knievel for Budweiser, you know, that was at the Dales Jr.
Oh.
And they threw it away and you got it out of the trash.
You visit that at somebody else's house.
You go to someone's house and they tell you, don't touch it.
Yeah.
A cutout display from like a supermarket was a big deal. And if there was a plastic, you know, fake motorcycle wheel with a clock in it or something that was worth nothing, it was a big deal. So everything was a big deal. And now nothing's a big deal.
I know.
Like kids have flat screens everywhere and like, who cares? And they're they're losing it too.
Because
like you ask them if they want a mini bike and they're like, I don't know why.
Right. I was listening to a TED lecture that was talking about how the amount of choice that people have has created real unhappiness.
Oh, yeah.
Because A, we have expectations. It used to be the reason we could be sort of satisfied with any given choice is if it didn't turn out to be the right choice, well, it's because the world didn't give us the right choice. It just weren't there.
Right.
But now the world gives us so many choices, our expectation is to have the perfect – be able to make the perfect choice. And if it's not, if we don't make that right choice, it's on us. Something wrong with us for making the wrong choice or not.
Well, I have a slightly different version
of that.
But also
it's managing expectation. Our expectations are way high.
I remember, I think it was around Christmas, and it was just Christmas, and I found myself with 2 weeks off and not much to do, you know, which just never comes up with me. I never have just a few days off, and there's nothing to do. And we found ourselves, me and the family and whomever, found ourselves going out to dinner a lot because that's what we do. You know, it's just to go out, where are we going tonight? What do we want to eat tonight? And I found ourselves sitting at a Chinese place near our house that I really love. And I was just sitting there and I said to Lynette, like, you know what? We got to slow this down because I'm not really enjoying myself. Like, and she's like, oh, thanks a lot. You know, and I was like, not you or the kids, but the event. Used to be something I really look forward to.
Going out to dinner.
Going out to dinner.
Oh, that was a couple times a year. You know, it was a big deal.
Yeah. The sizzler.
Yeah.
But even then, no Malibu chicken or Langostino or anything.
Nonstop.
It's like never ending. Yeah. And so I started to say, you know, 3 days, 4 days in a row of doing this, it's lost its luster. I need to sit home and crave this experience and then look forward to it. And underline it, you know, and on the calendar. And you need that. So my, I hung on to a greeting card that my uncle, when I say uncle, my family, we never know. But Gabby Furedy. Gabby was my grandfather, Laszlo's nephew, who experienced all kinds of trouble with the Nazis and everything and Hungary and finally made it to this country. And by the way, Gabby, back to previous shows and conversations of assimilation, was basically known as Gabe to everyone he worked with, because Gabby's a weird name and Gabe's a regular name. You know, he was Gabby when he was with my grandfather, right, and us, his Hungarian sort of family, but he was Gabe from work, you know. Yeah. And he wrote, I got a graduation. I got a high school graduation card from the Furedys.
Wow.
Yeah. I think I got the decorative popcorn tin from the Bruno
family. When you crapped in forever?
Forever.
Well,
probably a year. Not like I didn't empty.
You crapped in while you lived in the garage.
I had to.
But is that the one?
Well, I just got the card.
Is that the mythical popcorn tin?
Yes, it's decorative popcorn tin with the had a Christmas theme.
Looked
to
like
it.
A barrel, or looked like?
Yeah, it looked like a chamber pot, and it had a snap-on lid. It was. You'd be.
What do you look like a chamber pot?
I made it into a chamber pot. It was, you know, it was a foot around. It sat maybe 14 inches off the ground,
yeah,
and it had a lid that looked like it was a camping toilet. Like you just snap the thing back on the top.
I know what popcorn comes in.
And in the realm of back to the theme of you couldn't throw anything away, when I was done eating that popcorn in about an hour and 50 minutes.
Did it have the three chambers?
Yeah, it had the three chambers. Yeah. Had the regular.
Yeah, the cheese.
Cheesy.
Yeah.
And then the caramel corn. All right. Finish the caramel corn first.
Of course.
Then I think cheesy, then regular. Right. But either way, it's all gone.
Yeah.
And
you sort of mix the cheese and the regular.
Yeah. And then this tin, at the time, that would have been the fifth to seventh most valuable thing that I owned.
When did you think, this is the most valuable, one of the most valuable things I own? I better take a crap in it. How did that process go?
I was living in the garage. I was locked out of the house.
Just one particular night? Like this is an
emergency?
This is, or every night?
Well, every night.
Okay.
So the doors would lock up about 10 o'clock or whatever it was, and that was that.
Right. And so if you were to take a shit, you'd be able to do it before 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but it's a good chance I wouldn't be home.
Right.
So I'd come home. Yeah. I couldn't get in the house. Mm. I could take a leak out in the shrub or what have you.
As was the custom.
As was the custom. Uh-huh. I could shower with the hose. I had a hose bib right by the front door.
By the pool, sort of.
Not my pool.
Yeah. I get it.
I didn't have a pool, but I had a shower. I had a hose.
Yeah.
And it would be hot during the summertime.
Of course.
And I didn't have any problem hosing off. You know, no problem there.
To shower at night.
If I shower. Well, I would have to shower because I was working construction, be covered with shit,
right.
So I'd hose off there. And then later on, if I had to have a bowel movement, I would simply use the decorative pie tin.
But I mean,
what was
the moment? What was the process? What did you think that Bush? How would I prop myself? Oh, the pie tin. It's one of my most valuable
popcorn.
I
mean,
was like an angel and a devil on one shoulder.
I didn't have any qualms with it. If that's what you're asking.
Well, I'm just wondering what the thought process was.
I got to take a shit. I'm locked out of the house.
But it's one of my top five most valuable items.
I saw the utility in it.
It became more valuable, is what you're saying.
Well, like a corpse to the Donner Party.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
I need this in my life.
You sacred. It was sacred. You valued it.
It was an offering.
But you needed to give it an offering to enhance its value.
Yes, I did. So, and then, you know, later on, under the, you know, when the sun was shining, I could go out and dispose of it as I would.
Where would you?
You know, as I look back on it, the toilet paper part must have been a reach because I don't think I had any toilet paper laying around.
So
maybe some
leaves?
You know, no,
Ivy?
No, I think some like napkins from Taco Bell or something like that.
So those you stuff back into the bag?
Yeah, that was the difficult part because you could just throw them out in the yard.
I'm saying if you stuff them back in the bag, did it ever like come out accidentally when you're looking for some napkins?
I don't remember all the details of that.
Too traumatic.
Too traumatic. But I did get this card.
So wait, hold on a second. So where was the disposal? Where was the chamber pot dumped?
I would probably find an indiscreet place.
In the yard?
Yeah, the IV or something. Something that I thought could absorb it.
Is there a
it.
Dog or a cat or anything in the family?
A dog?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was your stepmom's backyard, right? She might have had a dog.
The thing about my family is they had a way of bringing everyone down to them.
No, but your dad brought your stepmom down to his level.
Well, what I mean is she may have liked dogs and may have had a dog if she was with the kind of person that said, hey, we should have a dog, you know. But my dad, the dog thing is a perfect window into their psyche, is, do you want a dog? Yes. Do you like dogs? Yes. Do you like dogs a lot? Yes, I do. Do you have a single family dwelling and a fence around it where you could safely keep a dog? Yes. Do you live in a residential neighborhood?
Does your son empty a shit pot in the backyard?
Yes to all the above. Will you get a dog? No. Why not? Because I have to feed it.
You have to take care of it.
You have to take care of it. Right. But wait a minute. Shouldn't your love of dogs outweigh this, you know, task that's going
to
take 8 minutes?
They need to be more like kids. They take care of themselves. They raise themselves.
Right. Yeah. So
this card.
The card, kept it all these years, but it turned out to be sort of ominous.
Ooh!
Because
can I see it?
He got me a novelty card. It was funny. It was kind of interesting. First off, it was 1982, and
this is literally the cartoon. This looks like Conjunction Junction. Whoever wrote those cartoons.
It's funny. It's 1982. It's a guy's graduating high school, and he's a black guy.
Yeah.
Which is
sort of. Yeah, I think
no,
he is.
No, he's pretty black.
Okay, yeah.
But the point is we've been on this bandwagon for a little while now. You know, it seems like in the last 15 minutes you start seeing the black guy pop up in the McDonald's commercial or whatever, but they were onto it in 82. So, describe it, Drew.
Well, it's three frames. It's a storyboard. And it's titled "Nowadays to Get Anywhere, a Graduate Has to Have Talent."
Shall I do this?
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you. All right, so it's a cartoon. It's three boards. First one is the guy skipping with the diploma.
And a yo-yo?
Has he got a yo-yo? Yeah. He's got a diploma. He's got a cap and gown. Nowadays to get anywhere, a graduate has to have talent.
Yeah.
That underlines talent, and underneath it says, "You have talent."
Okay.
And the next frame, a graduate has to have friends. Same guy's got puppies and cats and a bird on his hand, and it says, "You have friends." Then the bottom one says, a graduate has to have an unyielding desire to work. And it's a guy handing him a shovel. Comedically, another black guy, a black arm handing him a shovel.
Yeah.
I wonder where he got this card. Anyway, now, the guy was having a good time when he had talent and he had friends, but now he's quivering. Like,
mortified,
what?
Yeah.
I got to go to work.
Yeah.
And then you open it up and it says, you have friends. Which is interesting. It's the first time I've ever thought about this in my life. But it's an interesting, and says, congratulations to Ferdy. I was talking a few shows back about having dinner with my elderly dad.
Yeah.
And I said to him, he said, what do you attribute a lot of your work ethic to? Because it's not me. It's not mom. Where's it coming from? And I said, I was mothballed for a decade. I spent a decade wandering around construction sites, picking up garbage, digging ditches. That's 10 years of my life wasted.
10 years of hard labor.
10 years of I was sentenced to 10 years hard labor.
Yeah.
And those are pretty prime years when you're doing comedy, you know? That 20s decade. And I said, now I'm doing what I want to do, but I feel like I'm making up for lost time to a certain degree because I spent a lot of time just literally walking around. Just like, here's your job. What? See that dumpster over there? Yeah. See all the garbage around? Just pick it up, throw it in the dumpster. And I wasn't like, all right, but I'll be telling jokes at the same time or whatever. No, it was just, that was it. Walk around, pick up garbage, pick up a carpet cleaning wand, go to this restaurant at 2 a.m, just clean until the sun comes up. You know, just sweating. Like, I just wasted my life. And I said to him, there wasn't a human being at school with my friends, with you, with mom, with family, with anybody who said like, hey, maybe you could try this. Or, you know, hey, you're not a great student. Hey, you're pretty funny. Why don't you write some stuff down or get up there. Go do it. I got an open mic over at the Deli Smoker. Why don't you get up there and sign up. Tell some jokes. Or run them past me. I'll tell you what I think. It was a zero issue. And it was like, it wasn't not encouraged. To not encourage it would have been to bring it up.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, hey, I'm going to go clean carpets for the rest of my life. All right. Hey, did you empty your chamber pot? That's what my parents did. Well, my mom was more like, I don't get it, or that's not funny, or I tune out, like the worst, my mom is the worst audience on the planet. Yeah. My dad is the second worst, and my grandparents were kind of critical. Like, I'd try to pitch them some jokes. My grandfather wrote, you know, for the Academy, and was in the Academy, and wrote, you know, wrote. I'd try to pitch him some jokes, but he didn't like it. He didn't want to hear it. It was a weird... It's a very Jewy thing to do. Like, he'd pitch me really bad, punny, kind of old school jokes, and I'd pitch him some of my jokes, and he just wouldn't have any of it.
That's interesting.
The other part that's interesting is my dad was explaining to me that he was into comedy and would go over to there and pitch him jokes, and he'd still shut him down the same way. But I was like, Dad, you were into comedy? He's like, I wanted to be a comedian. It's like,
what?
Thanks, old man.
Isn't that interesting, though? Doesn't your dad have the theory that the son lives out the fantasy of the dad?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, he wanted to race cars. He should have said something or known something or something, but anyway, the thing about this, as I now look at it for the first time ever, with these fading old eyes, is the top one is you have talent, the second one is you have friends, and the other one is you have an unyielding desire to work. And you open it up, and it says, you have friends.
Yeah.
Now, I always kind of remember it, because the unyielding desire to work is the punchline.
Yeah.
I always kind of remember it as opening it up and going, you have talent, you have friends, you know, but you don't have this unyielding desire to work. That's the punchline.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny thing that they got rid of talent. So when I was 18, I got a card from my family saying, you don't have talent. I never really thought about the message of this thing because the way I would have constructed this, and I'm not saying it's not funny, but the way I would have constructed it is the first two were setups that you do have, and the last one is you're lazy.
And that, it's sort that, of, that, well, one out of three ain't bad, so good luck.
Right. The irony is, the whole thing was, in the bottom one where he's handing him the shovel, I was staring down the barrel of a shovel. Like, I was like, this seems funny, except if you're going to Stanford, it's funny. Yeah. This ain't funny to me. I am going to go dig ditches with said shovel on the construction. But this, it's weird. It's weird when the downtrodden, right?
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I never really thought about this, but this is funny. This is a weird kind of, you know, can't be a, hey, be proud of yourself, joyous, or whatever. It's got to have the, it's funny that it has a downtrodden turn.
It was weird. I would say that the sense of humor that generation had that kind of quality to it.
Well.
It was not even teasing.
I would say this too, which is, if I was getting a free ride to Brown, then get this car.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. But
what's Adam doing in 1982?
But they would
digging
make,
ditches. I don't know. In that which case, this is a little too on the nose for the kid who is digging ditches.
But they would have no trouble sort of doing that. You know what I mean? That sort of was the thing back then.
Well, so anyway. I would have no trouble with True Car, baby.
Of course.
That can help you buy new or used, doesn't matter. Over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles from over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide. So, whether you're looking to buy new or used, get upfront pricing, info on discounts or a list price, whatever.
Discounts you can't get anywhere else.
That is correct. my friend.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So see what others paid for your car. Get what you want. Get the fair price. Then connect with local certified dealers and enjoy a quick and easy buying experience. Why not, man? It's TrueCar. You do what our own Chris Maxipata did with his Prius. He went to TrueCar. He locked in his price. Got a car. Looks brand new.
It's nice.
Whether it's new, whether it's used, you're covered at TrueCar. So when you're ready to buy, TrueCar.com. That is TrueCar.com. All right.
Was that last call there?
Yes, last call. Hey, Harrison, 25, Virginia.
Hey, man, Drew, get it on.
Yeah, man.
There.
So I had a question for you. I'm kind of frustrated with my work lately. I've always been of the philosophy that has been reinforced by what I hear Adam say that, you know, you shut up and do your work and do more work and do better work than the guy next to you, and you'll improve yourself. But in this job that I've been in for about a year and a half now, I think it's time for me to get promoted. I've been working really hard towards that. And something that's most frustrating to me is when I'll, you know, keep my head down in the work all day, and then we'll have a meeting where all the higher-ups are on it, and then my counterpart or other people that work with me will you know, some of them do virtually nothing, but you'll hear them talk or during the meeting for like 30 minutes and just say nothing, and then by the end of it, it feels like they're more decorated than you know, than the people that did the work, and I don't say anything because I don't feel as though anything I said would benefit anybody. You know, coming from the philosophy of shut up unless you have something that's relevant to say.
Here's a, all right, listen. Here's the thing. When you're 25,
right,
time passes slowly, and you don't feel change or see change as much as you could see or feel change as you get older. But I do know this about work and about the workplace and whatever. And we all know if you just sit back, I always use Jimmy as an example and watch him just as a young person, you know, having people, he tell people, I want to do a radio show with Jimmy. No, no, just you, not Jimmy. You know, he's not talent, you know, and then, Jimmy and I finally convincing him to let me and Jimmy have a chance to do a radio show and them not picking it up, you know, like never being,
about that.
Never being deterred. It's constantly moving forward. And you blink your eyes and you're hosting the Academy Awards. Like, just the thing about it is you're like, I want recognition, or how come this guy gets recognition and that I don't get enough, and this guy got a raise and that guy got a raise. You put your head down, you go to work.
Yeah.
You will blink your eyes, you'll be 30, and you'll be far ahead of all these people.
And
that's just it.
And all these people are really, the only reason they're in a position they're in is they're asked to make decisions and take responsibility that you don't have. The fact that they aren't talented or don't seem smart or don't say anything good in meetings, don't have the damn meetings. They shouldn't even have – meetings to me are just – I don't understand.
But also don't get caught up in what other people are doing at work. That's a big mistake. Yeah. You show up, kick ass, and go home.
It's a common complaint in the 20s, that not really seeing the perspective of the people in authority.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but when I was writing for Jimmy and the Oscars, I think somebody may have said to me, how'd the other writers treat you? And I said, what do you mean? Well, you come in, you're Jimmy's buddy, you're writing jokes, he's praising you, telling how funny your jokes are, did they, whatever? And I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Why? Well, you know, whether they resent you or whatever. And I was like, I don't know.
Just get my job done.
That's up to them. Yeah. You know, I was like, well, you think they had some resentment because, you know, there's your Jimmy's friend and you come in at the last hour and he's talking you up. And I was like, oh, I would never do that. I don't know. I thought I got along with everybody. Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't. I don't know what was. They seemed nice. Everyone seemed nice. But what was lurking in their hearts, I have no idea. But not interested.
One thing Harrison does bring up, though, is the people who talk about what they're going to do and then don't do anything. That's insufferable.
That I don't like. Yeah. All right. So you want to find out about the Spike Show and get a question on there, you can email us at CorollaQuestions@gmail.com. You can be in the audience. You can go to the link at AdamCorolla.com if you want to go see the show live. 24-Hour War, You got that, chassis. You got 50% off shipping at Corolla Drinks. Say hi to Lynette. Use the code SNOWDAY. Oh, no safe spaces. Me and Prager. Yeah, check that out. Me and Prager doing a speech. Love that guy. A lot of wisdom there. It's iTunes and Amazon and Corolla.com. What do you got, Drew?
Go to Drew.com. Check out the family pods there. We need your help. We need your support. Sign up. Get iTunes. Give them a nice review. Let's do it.
All right. So, until next time, Adam Corolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.